So we pull in the driveway. Amber, my sister, gets out, and there's a huge planter in front of the house that you could sit on it, would be a good way. I would say it's probably 2 feet high. And we banged on the windows, and she wasn't responsive. And the bedroom itself was covered. Of the four walls, two were pretty much all picture windows that faced the street. And we saw her laying there. And Amber is known for making the comment, which I don't remember, but I know it's recorded, and she remembers saying it. My mom's all covered in blood. From there, my grandma went to the front door. It was locked. She went to the side of the house, and it was some safe small town. There wasn't even a doorknob in that door. My mom had been meaning to get it replaced. There was a bungee cord that she had bungeed to something else to work just in the meantime. And so my grandma unlatched it and went inside and found her. From there, she promptly took us across the street and started calling everybody. I just feel like we were frozen in time, just standing there watching her call people.
Now, did you see your mother?
I don't remember. I remember snapshots of that day.
I guess if you didn't see it, that's definitely good, because your mom, or if you did see it and your mind suppressed it, that's probably a blessing.
Yeah.
After your mom passed away, did the family have their own idea of who killed your mother? Or did they believe it was a stranger?
Immediately, I think that it was Comanche's a small town. There has to be somebody known to my mom.
And from what I understand, there is DNA and fingerprint evidence for this case. How far have they gone in the testing? Have they tested the boyfriend? Have they tested all the ex-husbands?
I will say we have an excellent team right now working on it. Within the last 2 years. Prior to that, I can't say that we have. I can honestly say that back in the mid-90s, they were given a grant of about $25,000, $50,000 to test the cold case DNA for OSBI. And all of them got through, and my mom's was next to be tested, and they ran out of money. So we're back in the middle of 1990, and my mom's DNA has never, none of that stuff's ever been tested.
So you're telling me justice is being delayed over a few bucks?
I can tell you that now, that is not the case.
Okay.
Again, in the last 5 years, OSBI have created a cold case unit that the agents receive these cases are only working these cold cases. Prior to that, agents would work new cases and cold cases, which was not beneficial to anyone. Well, I would say not to cold case families for sure. Asking for a update on anything on your family was pretty much non-existent, because they hadn't pulled the case. They didn't have a clue what was going on, because they had so much other stuff that was coming in.
Welcome to the Catch My Killer podcast, and thank you for listening. This is Mark. Since 2015, I have written a weekly column for the Claremont Sun newspaper located in Ohio about unsolved homicides and true crime. Before we discuss this week's episode, I would like to ask for your support. Please consider buying me a $5 cup of coffee every month to support the podcast. This will cover the expenses that come with producing a successful podcast. Simply visit CatchMyKiller.com and click on either the donate link or the buy me a coffee link if you can help. However, if you cannot donate to the podcast, you can still help by sharing these stories through word of mouth and social media. And that's enough of the coffee business. Mary Morgan Pewitt, who was 25 years old, was found murdered on June 4, 1988. More than 30 stab wounds had been found on her body. After Mary Morgan Pewitt's two daughters had spent the night at the home of David and Elizabeth Morgan, Elizabeth Morgan returned them to Mary on a Saturday morning. but she didn't receive any response. Amber, Mary's youngest daughter, peeked in her mother's bedroom window. The body of her mother lay on her bed, covered in blood. The investigation later revealed she had been stabbed 30 times. The case is still unsolved, and it remains Comanche's only unsolved murder. Mary was married 3 times, the first time at the age of 16. There were 2 more marriages. A second ended in divorce, and another was headed for a divorce. Mary faced financial difficulties. She was injured while working in a nursing home. Consequently, she had limited employment options. As of the time of her murder, she was employed at Harold's Club, the lone bar in Comanche, Oklahoma. Mary closed the bar on Friday, June 3rd, and took the receipts to the owner's house. She then went home to 611 North 10th Street where her boyfriend, Randy, was waiting. He claimed they watched television and he then left at 12:45 a.m. Mary was stabbed in the upper chest and neck after Randy left the house. The wounds on her arms and hands were the result of her attempts to defend herself. Although she was found in a t-shirt, underwear, and socks, an autopsy revealed that no sexual assault had taken place. Becky Petlin, Mary's first cousin, says the family refuses to let this case become a cold case. Becky grew up with Mary Morgan, her cousin. She was just a world of fun. I just love her so much. I thought of her as a little sister. In Petlin's words, this wasn't like a gunshot or something like that. She was basically butchered and slaughtered. She was stabbed over 35 times. I want them in prison and paying for what they've done. Petlin added, she was a very loving and giving person and she did not deserve this. She loved her daughters. She loved her family. Now I'm with the story of Mary Morgan Pewitt as told by her daughter Kira Allen Lowe.
She was born in 1963 on February 22nd. They're in Lubbock, Texas, to Elizabeth and Rusty Ford. They were married until she was about 4 years old. And then my grandma became a single mom 2 or 3 years. And then she met David Morgan, who adopted my mom. David was head over heels with my mom. There's nothing my mom could have done without his finding some acceptance in it. She wanted for something, she got it. All she needs, she just needed to ask Dad. But her relationship with her mom had deteriorated because my grandparents were church-going people. My grandma grew up wanting to be a missionary. My grandma was a song leader at church. And getting married at 16 years old, having 2 babies by 18 was not the ideal picture they had saw for their daughter. She had been married twice and on the second divorce by the time she was 18 years old, almost.
That's a lot of life experiences in such a short time.
That is a lot by 18. She did get remarried. He wasn't any better. He was older than her. In hindsight, she was looking for a safety net. I think she had always dated someone kind of her age. And she thought if she found someone older, they might provide stability. And looking back, it was anything but. He had been terminated from his position for not being able to fulfill job duties due to a substance abuse. With that last marriage, it was pretty much an infatuation because she was beautiful. She could walk in a room and smooth anybody with her smile. And he was overtly infatuated with her. He pretty much, I can't have you, no one will, with some of the letters that I have actually seen. So a year before she passed, he actually kidnapped me and my sister and from Oklahoma and brought us to Texas and held us for 3 days. And hoping, reconciling with my mom, and hoping somehow that would make her want to reconcile with him.
What was that like, being kidnapped?
We had no clue that's what we were doing. My mom had made it very clear we were at a babysitter's house, not to go with anybody but her or my grandparents. And he came by and told us he was going to take us to Dairy Queen to get ice cream. At that point in time, I knew instinctively that we weren't supposed to go. Told him, your mom said we weren't supposed to go anywhere. And he said, well, I'm going to take you to meet my daughter. And his daughter was like 18. And we were little kids and thought she was cool, I guess, no less to say. And he loaded us up in the back of his Bronco. And about 3.5 hours later, We woke up in Irving, Texas. We held there for 3 days, pretty much locked in the house. Do not go outside. Do not look out the windows. My grandpa, David, again, intervened and was able to talk him off the ledge, and he let those girls go. And so the local police department were able to get us out of that situation.
I think you were fortunate that you escaped with your lives. Had this gone on for longer than 3 days, the ending may have been different.
It would have. But again, my mom, I don't know if it was younger, naive, or a little bit of both, didn't press. It was pretty much, you go on your way, leave us alone. And my grandparents had purchased her a house in Comanche so that she could stand on her own 2 feet, so that she didn't have to worry about a man providing a roof over her head. She'd worked at the local nursing home for about 6 months, and she'd looked at a patient, and they had fallen on her, essentially. She had to have a back surgery, which left her unable to go down that career path any further.
And what was that path? Was it as a nurse?
In a certified nursing assistant kind of position. And she didn't even have a high school diploma. It was a step in the door of a lucrative position. It was right across the street from our house. I think she saw hope, and then she was giving back, and she was doing something she'd be proud of.
And then an injury ruined that.
Ruined all that. So February, end of February, I can't say your date because I'm not sure. At the end of February of 1988, she had back surgery. First, end of April, first part of May, she started working at Harold Bar in Comanche. And that is the last position she had before she died.
And Harold's, that was the only bar in Comanche, is that correct?
That is correct. You've got about 5 to 6 churches, one bar, one red light.
That's a small town. Is it still small like that today?
It is. And there's about 1,500 people.
So after she went to Harold's, I had read that she had delivered the nightly receipts to the owner, and then she went home and one of her friends was there and she watched TV and he left or something like that. So tell me about that. Is that all accurate?
She did go turn in the receipts. Yeah, that can be true. The person's testimony that owned the bar, we're looking at a time frame. They closed, I think, one is 8:12. He lived maybe 5-10 minutes away. From there, she drove home. The story kind of gets muddy. We've had different versions of whether her boyfriend met her at the bar and went with her to do these activities as drop off the receipt, or met her at her house. So there are some variations for sure. We know that friend was actually a boyfriend that she had known for about 3 months. His story is he spent about 15 to 20 minutes with her before leaving to go play video games with his 8-year-old child at 1:00 in the morning. Who does that when you have a woman that you're dating that has no children at home because they're at their grandparents' house? I have a recording that of him and I speaking that he left her in a t-shirt and a pair of panties.
To go play video games with his 8-year-old son.
Yes, at 1:00 in the morning. At the time, it was apparently believable. He spent about 30 minutes to an hour with the police department and was dismissed as a suspect.
Now, did they confirm his story?
I know things that are going on now, so it's hard to put the two differences separate. I think they already had a suspect in mind, based upon a tumultuous relationship with her previous husband, which is the father of my male sister. They were fighting for custody of us. It was a very tumultuous physical relationship on both parts. And I want to say they were automatically the suspects. And so I want to say that the boyfriend may have gotten overlooked.
That's a possibility. So he left an attractive lady to go play video games with a child at 1 a.m. That was a strange story. When the boyfriend left, was he angry?
According to him, he had weekend visitations of his child that weekend, and he had promised his son that he would be home by a certain time to play video games with him.
I'm guessing the police probably talked to the son or talked to the mother and confirmed that story.
I can tell you now, no.
That's easy to confirm.
I can tell you it was not confirmed at the time.
Oh, that's definitely suspicious. But for some reason, if they think he was involved or something, then he wasn't arrested. But he was the last person to have seen her alive. And I find that very interesting because you're always going to be a suspect if you're the last one. But then also from what I've read, there were several people of interest that would have had a reason for harming your mom. And I saw that she had been stabbed like 30 times or something like that. That tells me this was personal.
I completely agree.
That wasn't somebody that just happened to be walking down the street early in the morning and decided to break in and kill your mom. This was somebody that cared for your mom at one time or something and went into some type of a rage. That's how it sounds to me, and I'm sure that's probably what you feel and what the police feel also.
Yeah.
So now tell me about, how did you find your mom? Was it you that found your mom or one of your sisters or your grandmother?
It was a wild culmination. The arrangement had been that my mom was going to get off that night. My grandma had a Weight Watchers meeting to be in Oklahoma City, which is about 2 hours away. And so she was going to drop us off right at 5:36 o'clock. And so we pull in the driveway. Amber, my sister, gets out. And there's a huge planter in front of the house that you could sit on it would be a good way. I would say it's probably 2 feet high. And we banged on the windows and she wasn't responsive. And the bedroom itself was covered. Of the four walls, two were pretty much all picture windows that faced the street. And we saw her laying there. And Amber is known for making the comment, which I don't remember, but I know it's recorded and she remembers saying it. My mom's all covered in blood. From there, my grandma went to the front door. It was locked. She went to the side of the house, and it was so safe, small town. There wasn't even a doorknob in that door. My mom had been meaning to get it replaced. There was a bungee cord that she had bungeed to something else to work just in the meantime. And so my grandma unlatched it and went inside and found her. From there, she promptly took us across the street and started calling everybody. I just feel like we were frozen in time, just standing there watching her call people.
Now, did you see your mother?
I don't remember. I remember snapshots of that day.
I guess if you didn't see it, that's definitely good because your mom, or if you did see it and your mind suppressed it, that's probably a blessing.
Yeah.
After your mom passed away, did the family have their own idea of who killed your mother? Or did they believe it was a stranger?
Immediately, I think that it was Comanche's a small town. There has to be somebody known to my mom.
And from what I understand, there is DNA and fingerprint evidence for this case.
How far have they gone in the testing? Have they tested the boyfriend? Have they tested all the ex-husbands?
I will say we have an excellent team right now working on it. Within the last 2 years prior to that, I can't say that we have. I can honestly say that back in the mid-90s, they were given a grant of about $25,000, $50,000 to test the cold case DNA for OSBI. And all of them got through, and my mom's was next to be tested, and they ran out of money. So we're back in the middle of 1990, and my mom's DNA's never, none of that stuff's ever been tested.
So you're telling me justice is being delayed over a few bucks?
I can tell you that now that is not the case.
Okay.
Again, in the last 5 years, OSCI have created a cold case unit that the agent receives these cases are only working these cold cases. Prior to that, agents would work new cases and cold cases, which was not beneficial to anyone. Well, I would say not to cold case families for sure. Asking for a update on anything on your family was pretty much non-existent because they hadn't pulled the case. They didn't have a clue what was going on because they had so much other stuff that was coming in. And the region now is currently divided, I think, in four different regions. And when the cold case unit was created, my mom's case and another case was selected per her, however they've divided the state up, region to be worked. And I can tell you that DNA is being actively ran. So that is something for sure.
Okay.
Now we're just waiting.
And your mom's case is the only unsolved case in Comanche history. I would think it would motivate someone to want to solve your mother's case.
I'm not really one to give praise at this point in time to any of the investigators because I feel like we've not had a great one. But I will say the one that we currently have, we have a team of two. He was in law enforcement for 30 years. He was then picked up by the OSBI, completed the academy in June. And this is his first case. And I can tell you, he is eager to prove himself and to prove and to resolve this case. I've seen more movement since August to now than I have in 30 years.
That's saying a lot about the inefficiency of previous investigators.
In the past 30 years, how often did your family reach out to law enforcement for updates?
My grandpa left Halliburton, went and got a criminal justice degree from Cameron University, which is in Lawton, Oklahoma. Also, one of the OSBI offices happened to be in Lawton. So once a week, my grandpa stopped there for an update. And then, so not only bothering them, but any time there was a new sheriff, police officer, cop, anything in our little local town, much less county, he was making his presence known. It was, "Hi, I'm David Morgan. Mary Elizabeth's dad. Let me tell you about her." And that was pretty much his standard introduction to law enforcement.
He seemed like a determined man. Is he still with us now?
He is not. Where I picked up my fight, I promised him before passing that I wouldn't let his persistence and everything that he's done go in vain and that I would pick up the fight and keep pushing until we had an answer.
Now, is your grandmother still alive?
She is not. She passed away 4 or 5 years ago.
I have easily interviewed over 100 people for this podcast, and here is what I find the saddest part of speaking to so many people. It bothers me that mom and dad will put their lives on hold just to find out who killed their child. Unfortunately, many parents die before getting any answers. That truly makes me feel terrible. I am glad you picked this up from your grandfather. Is it just you working on this or does your family help you?
When my mom passed, her family is pretty much was my only family. Through all of this, I found out that my dad wasn't my dad and all kinds of lovely, intricate. And so I was determined to find my mom's first father's family. So in high school, I reached out and started finding somebody. So I have found her first, who looks very similar to my mom. She's probably about 10 years older than my mom. And we have a great relationship. And so she helped me with a lot of the social media part. She's from Los Angeles and has a professional assistant out there, and has that background and the strong drive of trying to figure out what happened as well. Because the last call they got, it was Mary had died and wanted everything they knew up until she was adopted by David, life was great. And now she's murdered.
Yeah. So I'm sure she wants to know answers too. She wants to find out just like you do because it was her cousin.
Right.
So you said you have a Facebook page, is that correct?
We do.
What's that called?
That's Mary Morgan Pewitt.
Is that it? Is that the whole name of it, or is there a Justice For or anything like that?
Nope. Mary Morgan Pewitt. It's a Facebook page.
Okay. So if people want to learn more about this case, or if they were able to submit a tip, could they just send it through this page?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Have you reached out to your local news to share your mom's story?
We have. We've done a podcast this summer. We did a first experiment with a local podcast that was up in the beginning and around town. And it was, I think, their first one, maybe their last one. The local news on her birthday this past year, the OSBI offered a $10,000 reward, you know, for any information or tips. And so, you know, of course, that went along with any of the local media. I completed an interview with Oklahoma City News, Lisa Montague, in January, which is yet to air. It'll air in January of this coming year because they're going to do a crime series of cold case families.
Now, if anybody has any information about this case, what law enforcement department do they need to contact?
Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation.
Now, what about the national news media outlets? Have you tried reaching out to them? They typically have large audiences.
I have not.
I think sometimes some of those are good for bringing cases into the spotlight. It may be something that you want to do.
Okay.
I would recommend that.
For any suggestions.
Sure. I would also reach out to your local politicians for help. Do you want to access any resources that can be given from the state to help get this case solved?
Absolutely. We had reached out to a show, Cold Justice. I spoke to Kelly. Kelly had spoke to our local district attorney's office. District attorney's office signed off on it. However, the OSBI would not sign off on releasing any document to them. So it shut it down. 2017 is when they shut it down. But they couldn't proceed because they didn't have the information. And the other side was they don't work with outside agencies.
That's ridiculous. There should be a law that only allows a police agency to keep a case for so many years. After the term expires, then other agencies should be permitted to review the case. There's no reason why you should be holding onto a case for 30 years. And then try to say, well, we can't release any information, or we can't share with anybody, or we can't talk to anybody. You've had it long enough. I think a lot of it is, it's personal. They feel like, how great would they look if they let Kelly's team come in and solve this case in 2 weeks, and they've been sitting on it for 30 years? How inept would that make them look? But see, the thing is, it shouldn't matter who solves it. Who gives a damn? You want justice for
it. These people that are currently working in the DA's office aren't the people that weren't working there 30 years ago either. And so it's like a double-edged sword for sure. Because we had a great team willing to, they were like, yes, what more manpower we have, because they were a small agency. And yeah, they were all eager and excited. And they were so, you know, so do.
It's too bad. I've talked to other people. I talked to a couple of sisters a while ago, and they, same thing, they had agreed to do the show. The show had agreed to cover the case, but their local law enforcement refused to work with them, so it shut it down. And the same thing, it was another long time unsolved homicide. And I know the sisters were absolutely infuriated by it, because nothing's been done on it. And they're like, if she can help us solve it, then, but they weren't even given the chance. I think a lot of that has to do with them not wanting somebody else to solve their crime. They don't want somebody else stepping in their backyard. What's that kind of a thing?
Right.
They don't look at it like we do, that it doesn't matter. Nobody cares. We don't care who, I don't care who gets credit. Give credit to Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck. I don't care. You all can take credit. Just solve it.
I now have one final question for you. If anyone listening to this podcast has information about this case, what would you say to them?
We just want closure. It's not about hating this person anymore. It's not about. We think by knowing who did it, we'll know the reason why. We just want the person to be brought into for us to have a full circle closing. Because right now, grief is not finished. There are so many unanswered questions. And as a parent now with a daughter, she has no grandparents. She doesn't understand what it is to be a grandma, to have a grandma. I had to explain that the other day. Yeah, she was asking me what a grandma is. And you never know. If somebody can do this once, they can do it again. And we just want an answer and we want closure.
And that concludes the story of Mary Morgan Pewitt. What happened to Mary? She was a young mother who has missed out on becoming a grandmother or seeing her daughters grow up. Can you help this family get justice for Mary? If you have a tip, please contact Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation at 1-800-822-8017. Tipsters can remain anonymous if they so choose. And if you would like additional information, please visit the Mary Morgan Pewitt Facebook page. I will also provide this information in the story notes. And if you are a parent, law enforcement official, friend, or relative seeking justice for an unsolved homicide case, please visit my website and complete the contact form or contact me through Facebook. Thank you for listening.